Before I begin today's sermon, I'd like to acknowledge and thank Reverend Rob Hardies and Reverend Susan Newman, despite the fact that neither of them are here. As Gabrielle Farrell said recently, in some ways, the pulpit is the only thing in a Unitarian Universalist church that the minister owns. So I'm very grateful to be here with you today. When I think of Eden, of the gentle arms of Eden, I think of the places on earth that evoke the seeming miraculous power of life and existence. Rocks carved by water and wind. The long, narrow lines of ants carrying leaves too big for them. The flowers blooming in their procession, spring and summer and fall. I think of Earth, unspoiled and beautiful. The beautiful garden, the place where human beings live together in joyful harmony. This is the Eden of the Torah, of the book of Genesis. And one way we can find more of these glimpses of Eden is to become, as the bumper sticker says, tree-hugging dirt worshipers. When many folks think of the Garden of Eden and human beings' place in it, they recall the admonition to subdue, to have dominion over the earth. And certainly we humans have taken this subduing attitude, this sense of entitlement, to an extreme. We are killing our own home, drowning the islands where we live, poisoning our water, air, and food supply. And not only that, but some believe we have a religious or economic mandate to do so. Significantly, though, before the divine admonition to subdue anything, before the first couple's difficulties with God and the snake and the tree and all that, before that, the text reads that God put humanity into the garden to tend it, to be gardeners, to work with earth, to bring forth beauty and vitality. There is also some of this working together with earth in our own UU principles, as there are hints in other religious traditions. In our seventh principle, we say that we have respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. And while this declaration is important, I don't think it goes far enough. I think it lacks the joy and connectedness of happy gardeners with their hands in the mud. I think we can go further than respect. I think we need to tend Earth, love Earth, even worship Earth. I just think our principle lacks the sense of abandon of the aforementioned tree-hugging dirt worshipers. And I think we can all aspire in one way or another to worship the dirt, as it were. And many of us already do. I don't mean just those who self-identify as having an earth-centered spirituality. I mean any of us who already worship the ground we walk on. And why on earth, so to speak, do I keep using this word, worship? To worship is to hold in the highest esteem. It is to prize, to value highly. One could say that our culture worships idols of capitalism and consumerism, the imperative to buy and sell. But worship, as I hope we know from our own worship celebrations here, can be beautiful and uplifting. And I maintain that one of the most worthy objects of our worship, our treasuring, our cherishing, is Earth. At this point, however, we human beings don't act like gardeners engaged in loving attention, and certainly not in worship. Earth is in many places unrecognizable as a garden, unrecognizable as a being cherished by those who live with her. She shows much more the evidence of inattention and denial. And let me tell you, inattention and denial, when brought to bear on a garden, bring nothing good. I should know. Because in one of my own garden plots, over the warm winter and spring, grass crept in, choked the flowers. The whole thing is overrun, and I have to start over. Inattention has led to the loss of my garden. How much more so when humanity ignores our effects on the paradise in which we live. And I love this word, paradise. Paradise, it means, it comes from words that mean an enclosed park or garden. Just like the earth, enclosed in the atmosphere. This paradise, this garden of earth, this gorgeous, beautiful being, so worthy of our love and attention, is like that enclosed space. Earth has limits, and we are pushing up against those limits. We are coming to the end of the time when we can abuse our habitat with impunity. It's easy, though. It's very easy, faced with this, to be paralyzed. It's easy to be stricken by the degree of our peril. It's easy to be overwhelmed. All of us have run into places and times where we felt that there was simply nothing we could do, nothing we could change, no way that we could make a meaningful difference. And so we have thrown our hands up in despair. I felt paralyzed one summer day south of my house in Morgantown, West Virginia. West Virginia, as you may know, has some of the worst environmental degradation in the country. Mountaintop removal mining blasts the tops off of mountains, just as it sounds, and the rubble falls into stream beds, destroying not only the landscape and entire ecosystems, but the culture and livelihood of thousands of people. Furthermore, supposedly closed coal mines, as well as ones in use, belch toxic runoff into streams and rivers. And it was that runoff I saw. Not just the water, though its garish blue and orange color alarmed me. It was children swimming in the water. And why shouldn't they be there? The stream was right behind their homes. Trailers set alongside the creek's edge, downstream from a coal mine. There were people around, adults. The kids were being supervised. I couldn't help wondering whether the trailers set there were homes for those too poor to avoid poison. And the thought made me achingly sad. I felt paralyzed, unable to do anything but remember. And all of us have stories we could tell of water unrecognizable as water, a garden unrecognizable as a garden. But we can move past this. We can move past this paralysis and into a new space of attention and love, a space even of worship. Because Earth's problems are bigger than any individual can solve on his or her own, bigger than our groups, our denominations, it's important to remember that we are not alone, any of us. Existence, living and dying, living again, being, the mere fact of existence is the only game in the universe, and it is a team sport. We are all in peril and sharing in hope together. And so we may all respond together. And these responses, if they are to be sustained, genuine, and effective, stem not from a desire for perfection or from some messianic delusion that we can do it all, but rather from love Because worship, after all, is not about perfection. It is about love. As Cardinal Oscar Romero, the justice-seeking Salvadoran cleric, wrote, "We plant the seeds that one day will grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing they hold future promise. We cannot do everything. We cannot. And there is a sense of liberation in that. It enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete. It will be incomplete. But it is a beginning. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders. We are ministers, not messiahs." Romero says we are ministers, not messiahs. And we are indeed all ministers, not only those who stand in this pulpit to preach, but each and every one of us. And as ministers, that is those who minister to one another, we can take up our work as the celebratory worship it is that helps us act out of our own experiences in our own spheres of influence on the ground where we walk. Just as one Sunday celebration looks different from another, just as one garden looks radically different from another, so will our responses to earth look different from one another. Our responses emerge from our hearts, from our love, and from our own discernment. Each of us then can only do as we are moved to do. We are only called to be our authentic selves. But knowing what we're led to means we must listen to our hearts, listen, follow their lead, and allow them to help us clarify our commitments and our values. We may find ourselves doing what feels like less than a neighbor, but we must resist the temptation to compare. And we may find ourselves doing what feels to our egos like more than our neighbor. And we too must resist the temptation to compare. We are each called to our own work, not to anyone else's. And what moves me is to read, to write, to preach, to make ceremony in ways that honor the seasons and the cycles of the earth. What moves me has been to change the way I eat, the way I shop, the way I think about food. But you walk in your own way, entirely different from mine. And I celebrate the work that each of us is doing already, particularly in this congregation. Some of that work is public, meeting with legislators, DC demonstrations, teaching all of us about the needs of our venerable building. And some of this work is private, planting meadow gardens in place of grass, drinking from reusable water bottles, bicycling to work and to church. Worship is simply the reverent acknowledgement that we walk on holy ground. This place, this time, the yards and gardens we tend, the streams that run past our houses, the animals who share our little habitat. Our collective worship is the gathered power of limitless words, actions, and ways of being. And maybe it just means falling in love with the grass, the rocks, the flowers, and the squirrels outside our door. It means whatever we are led to offer this being of greatest value, whatever is ours to do. Because worship is not about perfection or about loneliness. It is about love and about being together. It is about knowing that every micron, every soil microbe in the ground we walk on is holy. And furthermore, that it may be one more redeemer for us. Whatever we believe about the forces that hold the universe together, whatever we believe about that myth of the first couple in that primeval garden, whatever we believe about Orishas or Devis or the Buddhas within, about the myths and icons of the sacred worth around the world, I encourage us to begin or deepen another practice of worship. Let us lament as we need to, but let love and delight move us past paralysis, to tend the earth as a great garden, to stand barefoot and careful on this holy ground, and to embrace the path of hope, the path of the tree-hugging dirt worshiper. Blessed be, and amen.